We have to love more, hate less.
Many believe that bisexuality isn't a real orientation.
He went back and forth to London for a while until the U.S. wouldn't admit to his lover, a citizen of the U.K.
Frank Kameny, grandfather of the gay movement.
We have your friend in the next room. She's already told us that you're gay. You give us the names of others and we'll go easier on you.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Britain's parliament advances Northern Ireland marriage equality, a new bio gets fictional to paint David Hockney's life, and it's Fearless Frank versus the Lavender Scare. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Jessica Andrea.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 13, 2019. Marriage equality is finally coming to Northern Ireland, one way or another. MPs in Britain's House of Commons voted on July 9th to give Northern Ireland's Assembly until October 21st to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. If that fails, then Parliament will take the necessary steps to do it. The measure passed overwhelmingly and also liberalizes abortion rights in the recalcitrant region. Northern Ireland's assembly became dysfunctional in 2017. Irreconcilable differences between the major political parties on how to resolve such important issues led to the breakdown. Surveys have shown a majority of people in Northern Ireland favor marriage equality. Even so, the ruling Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, has used its legal prerogative to block all efforts to move the competing Sinn Féin Party's marriage equality bill through the Assembly. Equality activists have been calling on the British government to step in ever since marriage equality was established in England, Scotland, and Wales in 2014. In 2015, the Republic of Ireland became the first country to legalize civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples by popular vote.
Outgoing Prime Minister Theresa May's resistance to calls for parliamentary intervention made this week's move a surprise. On the other hand, Northern Ireland is the last major part of the United Kingdom without marriage equality. With no resolution in sight in the Assembly, British MPs decided to act. Sinn Féin spokesperson Conor Murphy told the BBC that, "Our preference is for the Assembly to do this, but in the absence, Westminster has a responsibility to legislate for these matters." At least a few DUP members are privately expressing relief that the British Parliament is relieving them of having to deal with the socially contentious issues. That's, of course, assuming that the legislative stalemate continues in Northern Ireland past the October 21st deadline. The bill must still be approved by Britain's House of Lords. The BBC says that it's unlikely to be rejected there.
Botswana Attorney General Abraham Ketshabe has announced that his government is appealing last month's High Court ruling that overturned the laws against consensual adult same-gender sex. Ketshabe didn't specify the grounds for appeal. He said only that, "I am of the view that the High Court erred in arriving at this conclusion." A press statement from Lesbians, Gays, and Bisexuals of Botswana called the move disappointing and said, "It suggests that LGBTI's lives should be determined by the majority, which is wrong." A three-judge panel of the High Court decided in June that the Southern African nation's colonial-era statutes were unconstitutional. Consensual adult same-gender sex could be punished with up to 7 years in prison. The judges ruled unanimously that those provisions of the penal code violated privacy, liberty, and dignity and served no public interest. They wrote that, "Any discrimination against a member of society is discrimination against all." There has been no word about when the case might be heard by Botswana's Court of Appeal.
About two dozen brave activists defiantly marched for Pride in Tbilisi, Georgia on July 8th. A police crackdown on anti-Russian protests in the Eastern European nation's capital forced the cancellation of a parade planned for June 22nd. But organizers had faced strong opposition before then. The government said that participants' safety could not be guaranteed and warned of possible attacks by anti-queer right-wing groups. The country's politically powerful Orthodox Church also weighed in with the charge that the event would promote the sin of Sodom. They said it was against the Christian faith, traditional religious teachings, and moral values. People holding signs and waving rainbow flags marched for about 30 minutes outside the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Then word spread that forces intent on violence were heading for the area. Organizer Gheorghe Tabagari said that details shared online about the March of Dignity were leaked to anti-queer protesters. He told Reuters that the threatened violent opposition probably suppressed the number of LGBTQ pride participants. A relatively peaceful counter-demonstration was held nearby with no physical confrontations, although Tabagari said that homophobes chased him in his car for a few blocks after the march. He called the pride event very significant. Visibility is important.
An independent expert on protecting LGBTQ plus people from violence and discrimination has been extended by the United Nations Human Rights Council for another 3 years. The post has been held by Costa Rican jurist Victor Madrigal Borlos since 2018. His mandate was extended by a resolution during the 41st session of the Human Rights Council in Geneva. 27 member states voted in favor, 12 voted no. 7 abstained, including India. Well-known anti-queer regimes, Egypt and Pakistan, led efforts to stop or limit the extension with bothersome amendments. But speaking for the majority, Fiji representative Nazat Shamim Khan insisted that all people are born free and equal in dignity and rights. Human rights are universal. The resolution was championed by a number of representatives from Latin American nations. There's been no United States representative on the UN Human Rights Council since last year. The Trump administration yanked the country's membership over what it obtusely called ideological differences. The global queer advocacy group Outright Action International calls the UN and its Human Rights Council ports of last call for LGBTQ plus people when their own governments fail them.
Amnesty International is calling on the government of South Korea to end the criminalization of gay sex in its predominantly male military. Accused personnel are usually kicked out for what's called disgraceful conduct. There are no laws banning consensual adult same-gender sex by civilians. All qualified men in South Korea are required to serve for at least 21 months of active duty. A few court cases have eroded conscription requirements to some degree, but officials justify the forced service because they are still technically at war with North Korea. The two Koreas signed an armistice in 1953, but never a peace treaty. Higher-ups in South Korea's armed forces believe that allowing gay conscripts to have consensual sex somehow diminishes discipline and readiness. Supermasculinity is also stressed in the ranks, and effeminate conscripts have an especially difficult time. Amnesty's report, issued on July 11th, is called Serving in Silence, LGBTI People in South Korea's Military. The global human rights group documents how harassment, intimidation, and outings are ruining lives. Dozens of soldiers spoke on the condition of anonymity. Specific cases often involved command officers using their power over lower-ranking personnel. The report blames an institutional failure for the persistent problems. The report concludes, "This hostile environment fosters abuse and bullying of young men who stay silent out of fear of reprisals." Global advocate Human Rights Watch submitted an amicus brief in March in a case challenging the military gay sex ban that's now before South Korea's constitutional court. It says the ban violates many norms of international law.
A defense spending bill amendment that overturns Donald Trump's ban on military service by transgender people passed the U.S. House of Representatives on July 11th. 10 Republicans joined the Democratic majority to approve the amendment, sponsored by California Congresswoman Jackie Speier. It's unlikely that the measure will survive in the Republican-controlled Senate, but Speier held its bipartisan passage as a watershed moment in the fight to celebrate and protect open transgender military service. The U.S. Supreme Court allowed Trump's ban on trans military service to take effect in April, while its legality is still being challenged in lower courts.
U.S. women's national soccer team outspoken and proud lesbian co-captain Megan Rapinoe spent the past week as the toast of the town wherever she went, including a classic New York City ticker tape parade on July 10th for her team celebrating its historic fourth World Cup win. Shortly after grabbing two of the top trophies for her individual performance during the tournament, Rapinoe exclaimed, "You can't win a championship without gays on your team." In her stirring speech calling for equal pay for women in the sport, Rapinoe challenged anyone who was listening.
"This is my charge to everyone. We have to be better. We have to love more, hate less. We got to listen more, and talk less. We got to know that this is everybody's responsibility. Every single person here. Every single person who's not here. Every single person who doesn't want to be here. Every single person who agrees and doesn't agree. It's our responsibility to make this world a better place.
Rapinoe also seems to be winning a Twitter tussle with President Donald Trump. Before the game, she emphatically, with a capital F, declared she was not interested in being hosted at the White House if her team won. Trump disparaged the team's prospects at the time, but has been silent since.
And finally, Megan Rapinoe was a big winner again late this week at the 2019 Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Sports Awards, accepting the Generation of Change Award. She shared the spotlight with Legend Award winner Dwayne Wade, a three-time National Basketball Association champ and Olympic gold medalist. Too bad Wade was not honored for his pro-queer parenting. He posted pictures on Instagram of his youngest son, Zion, celebrating at Miami Beach LGBTQ Pride festivities earlier this year with his actress stepmom, Gabrielle Union, and his older siblings. Wade captioned his post, "We support each other with pride." He told Variety that it was simply my job as a father. The Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Sports Awards ceremonies will be cablecasted on August 10th.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending July 13th, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazor, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Jessica Andrea.
And I'm John Dyer V.
It was his courage to be himself that factored into his huge success as an artist and a gay pioneer.
A novel approach to a living person, later in the program.
You heard of LGBTQ plus? Well, I am the B. I have a heart that could love plural genders. Yes, I'm bi, and I'm proud to be me.
Just about every stereotype begins with a grain of truth. Since nobody wants to be considered stereotypical, it can be tough when that grain of truth strikes close to home. The B's in the LGBTQ frequently feel that pinch. One of Outcasting Overtime's queer youth commentator has been there.
This is Outcasting Overtime from Media for the Public Good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Lucas, an Outcasting youth participant. On this edition, Outcaster Alex talks about a stereotype about bisexual people and how his own coming out story fits into that stereotype.
Back in November of 2016, Outcasting released an overtime piece, just like this one, about bisexuality and how it is often misunderstood and stereotyped. Many believe that bisexuality isn't a real orientation, but rather a temporary self-identification people adopt before they come out as gay. Here's the thing. It so happens that this was the case for me when I first came out. I identify as gay now, but when I first came out to my friends, I identified as bisexual. I did this for two reasons. The first is that, on some level, I had felt attractions to girls before that. It was akin to the crushes that any little kid has before getting wind of what a romantic relationship actually entails. I don't give these crushes much weight now, but I do acknowledge that they were real. They were a part of my experience and development, and I don't want to shrug anything like that off. But my second reason aligns with that stereotype of bisexual people. I wasn't necessarily comfortable identifying as gay straight off the bat. The world of being LGBTQ was alien and scary. Beyond what I had seen on the internet, I had no idea what being gay would mean for my life. Identifying as bisexual was a stepping stone for my later identity as gay. So, I am that stereotype in some way. Eventually, I decided to come out as gay rather than bisexual. The why is important. Examining my sexuality, I see that I am attracted to women on some level. But I am certainly less attracted to women than I am to men. Many people would call me bisexual because of this. Regardless, I choose to identify as gay because I think that a romantic relationship for me with a woman would be unsuccessful and unfulfilling. There are two sides to how we feel attraction, the romantic side and the sexual side. Labels aren't meant to be used to categorize people like scientific names for animals and plants. Even though I might feel some sexual attraction towards women, I'm not interested in dating them. I don't experience romantic attraction towards women. So, because the relationships I'm interested in are with men, I identify as gay. In all, this stereotype of bisexual people makes me conflicted. On one hand, some people might think that my experience validates a largely negative stereotype. On the other hand, this experience is something that I know to be true for me, and was definitely necessary to realize my identity. And I'm inclined to think that this is true. Not everyone who identifies as bisexual will have the same experience as me. Certainly not, because I don't identify that way anymore. Life is far more diverse than we realize. Though labels can instill a sense of community, they can also be trapping. Like all the ways that people identify, stereotypes come with being attached to a group. Not everyone in a specific group is the same. We all have a wide web of beliefs and interests that make us unique and different from other people, even the ones who are most similar to us. And who cares if people change how they identify? Just as our lives undergo all sorts of changes, our attractions can change over time. Because of the nature of our society, everyone is assumed to outwardly identify as straight and cisgender at birth. That doesn't mean that all of us identify that way now, right?
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization that produces public radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Our executive producer is Mark Sofus. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
There's nothing cooler than the world's only international LGBT radio magazine.
Unless it's thiswayout.org.
At thiswayout.org, you'll find program information,
related videos,
expanded features,
news wrap transcripts,
CDs, and downloadable materials.
It might not be cooler than radio,
but there's much more This Way Out at thiswayout.org.
We demanded a congressional hearing, which, to our pleasant surprise, they gave us.
A new documentary features that one-of-a-kind gay activist, but first, a new book features a one-of-a-kind gay artist. The New York Times Book Review says Catherine Cusett captures the psyche of a painter. David Hockney is that painter, and he says that he recognized himself in the novelized biography Life of David Hockney. But what does This Way Out queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason say?
David Hockney is one of our pioneers, a well-known artist and a gay man. As a person with his love and inspiration, the two have never been separate. David Hockney hails from the working-class city of Bradford, England, the same place that my mother's ancestors lived, which may be one of the reasons why I was so intrigued with this book. I had heard of Hockney as a gay man and as an artist by reading The Life of David Hockney by the French novelist Catherine Cusset and published by Other Press in 2019 told me so much more. The book is written as a novel. As the author writes in the prologue, all the facts are true, but I have imagined feelings, thoughts, and dialogue. I used intuition and deduction rather than actual intervention. The novel is unusual in its fictionalization of someone who is still alive. Born in 1937, Hockney is currently in his early 80s. The book does not disappoint. In fact, the word lovely comes to mind. Hockney was always openly gay and obsessed with literature, especially with the gay poets Walt Whitman and C.P. Gaddafi. Toward the end of the book, the author writes, that is what attracted David to art, what he liked best in his favorite painters, Piero della Francesca or Claude Lorraine. The complex balance of colors and opposed elements, the place of man in space, the feeling that he was but a small part of the greater whole. The artist was a priest of the universe. He came of age as gay in Bradford when he was a teen, was championed by his mother as an artist and went to the Royal College of Art in London. He went through all the things that gay people usually go through, like being discovered by one of his straight peers, but it was the late 1950s. Successful as an artist early in life, he went to New York, where he was impressed with a number of gay bars, along with the museums and vegetarian restaurants. He went back and forth to London for a while, where he spent his life until the U.S. wouldn't admit to his lover, a citizen of the U.K., so Hockney moved back to the region of England where he had grown up. Ultimately, it was his courage to be himself, specifically his gay self, that along with his artistic genius, his dedicated work habits, he worked every day, along with the good people in his life and fate, that factored into his huge success as an artist and a gay pioneer. Life of David Hockney by the French novelist Catherine Cousset. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Present president excluded, there have been real witch hunts in U.S. history. During the mid-1950s, Senator Joel McCarthy and his infamous gay henchman Roy Cohn targeted suspected communists. That witch hunt led to the purge of gay and lesbian federal employees. A new PBS documentary called that purge The Lavender Scare. It features the voices of Cynthia Nixon, Zachary Quinto, and T.R. Knight, with David Hyde Pierce as the voice of Frank Kameny. We'll begin to tell Kameny's story in a Rainbow Minute, and then This Way Out Entertainment reporter John Dyer V reviews The Lavender Scare.
Frank Kameny, grandfather of the gay movement, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Frank Kameny was born in New York in 1925. He served in World War II and later earned his Ph.D. in astronomy. In the 1950s, he took a civil service position with the Army, but he got fired because at that time, the government banned employment of homosexuals. Kameny was the first to take such a case to the Supreme Court. Although he didn't prevail, he was eventually vindicated because in 1975, the Civil Service Commission amended its anti-gay policy. He once said, quote, "My dismissal amounted to a declaration of war against me by the government, and I tend not to lose my wars." In that spirit, Kameny helped found the Washington, D.C. branch of the Madison Society, organized the first gay demonstration at the White House, and co-founded the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. Frank Kameny's successes were all forged by his central thought, gay is good. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Tom Miller.
We have your friend in the next room. She's already told us that you're gay. You give us the names of others and we'll go easier on you.
Modern gay history can be considered a patchwork affair. A lot of times, we don't learn about certain people or events until they are brought forward by first-hand witnesses, or dedicated historians, or by circumstances that happen to shed light on a newly discovered part of our story. Today, most of us have heard about the Stonewall Inn, and current discussion is rampant regarding the corporatization of 21st century gay life. The PBS documentary The Lavender Scare is an illuminating and much-needed exposé of gay life in the nation's capital before Stonewall. Through a series of talking head interviews and voiceovers, we are shown how, during the late 1940s and early 1950s, a concerted effort was made by the president and his powerful agencies to root out and eliminate all homosexuals, or even suspected homosexuals, from serving in any official capacity with the U.S. government.
Tens and tens of thousands of people fired from or kept from jobs.
We learn how this was tied in with the communist witch hunts. A false equivalency was drawn to gay people being vulnerable to blackmail and enforced spying because of their undisclosed private lives. This is all the more enraging when we realize that most of these bright young professionals had recently survived fighting in World War II and only wanted to continue serving their government and their country. We are made witness to truly tragic stories of dedicated and talented workers having their lives destroyed by an arbitrary and false assumption. This sometimes resulted in suicide.
They swooped in like death with his scythe, sweeping through the place and knocking everybody out.
We also learn about those who fought back. The last part of the Lavender Scare discusses the amazing and inspiring work of astronomer and military veteran Frank Kameny.
He has the confidence to declare, "I don't care if you tell me I'm sick or a criminal. I know that that is not true and that that is wrong." And it was that attitude that labels him as different from the activists who had come before him.
We demanded a congressional hearing, which, to our pleasant surprise, they gave us. We sent him an engraved parchment, a citation for his wonderful service to us, for having given us publicity that we never would have had before.
Showing in bold relief that it only takes one dedicated and principled person to stand up effectively against falsehoods and prejudice, the Lavender Scare illustrates how we can all potentially become the catalyst for much-needed change in a society that too often marginalizes our best and brightest for absolutely ridiculous reasons. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
You can get more information about the Lavender Scare at thelavenderscare.com. The late Frank Kameny left all of his information in a safe place, revealed in this bonus Rainbow Minute.
Frank Kameny cleans out his attic, coming up now on The Rainbow Minute. In October of 2006, in a ceremony at the Library of Congress, longtime gay activist Frank Kameny officially presented over 70,000 documents and picket signs he'd collected pertinent to the gay movement. They were thereby destined for historical archives, a goal that was long in the making. At the ceremony, Kameny said, quote, "Nearly 50 years ago, the United States government banned me from employment in public service because I am homosexual. This archive is not simply my story. It also shows how gay and lesbian Americans have joined the American mainstream story of expanded civil liberties in the 20th century. Today, by accepting these papers, the nation preserves not only our history, but marks how far gay and lesbian Americans have traveled on the road to civil equality." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Chris Dalbum.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Jessica Andrea and John Dyer V, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Tom Miller and Chris Dalbaum, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, from Janet Mason, and from John Dyer V. Dodie Clark and Miniature Tigers performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, John Beaupre, Richard Merck, and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WAZU Peoria, Illinois, KHOI Ames, Iowa, Tasman FM, Nubina, Tasmania, and some 200 stations and other outlets around the world, including this one. Do stay tuned.